Welcome to ITE 1 Module 10. Today we're going to be talking about customer service, which, of course, being self-explanatory, means the service you provide to customers as a technician. Today, the service we provide to customers, or essentially public relations, is just as important as actually fixing computers. So to actually diagnose what problems there might be or determine from customers what they need in a computer to be built, we have to talk with them. And today's chapter is essentially outlining the etiquette and rules surrounding that. So yes, customer service skills are pretty important. You want to make sure that understandable by the customer and able to essentially on the same level as them. Think of a time when you actually had to call to get something repaired or find out something. You want to essentially deal with people the same way you would like to be dealt with, but keep in mind that each person is different. So if you're a highly knowledgeable individual, you can't exactly use high-powered jargon at the person who might just be pulling the computer out of the box for the very first time. Good communication skills take time and practice to develop, just like good technical ones. Next week, you'll be getting some practice with this in role plays, in which you'll get to see the hilarious Daphne among other characters. So the first step in solving a problem is usually speaking with the customer. You need to know the symptoms of the problem from the customer's point of view. So of course, the one thing you'll want to do is develop a good rapport with the customer. Speaking clearly kind of helps in this, as well as things such as, "Can I call you so and so?" When we were in the company, we were instructed to verify the customer's name on the account and then ask if we could call him by the... Oddly enough, I had a roommate who's one of his customers insisted on being called Dr. So-and-so. In fact, he said Dr. So-and-so to you when Steve asked if he could call him by his first name.
Wow. That's often because doctors worked pretty hard to become doctor, whereas if you do that to Ian Murray, he just sort of laughs at you. But yeah, a lot of the doctors feel that they spent so long in medical school. They're like, "Well, I earned
that
doctor."
It's been 10 years.
So there are some rules for how to be used at the beginning of a call. As I just said, know your customer by name. Create a one-to-one connection between you and the customer. So basically, understand your customer. Is your customer Carrie, who's been, you know, using computers for a number of years, and you can just ask direct questions to get answers, such as, you know, is the network card turned on in Device Manager, and he'll know what you're talking about, or is the customer my grandmother, who when we were trying to troubleshoot playing solitaire, actually dragged the icon onto her desktop because she didn't know how to use the mouse properly. And of course, I couldn't help her with that, and it led to serious incidents. So the one thing you want to do is practice active listening skills. Let the customer tell the story in their own way. And say things such as, "I understand," "Yes, I see," or "Okay," at occasional times. I had a very nice elderly lady once when I was on the phone, and she was trying to tell me how the computer didn't work, and so I said, well, what was it on the screen before the error message?" And she didn't understand, and I said, "Well, did it play any noises when it did it dial the phone before it did anything?" And she said, "Yes, it went did it, and then it just sat there." So I realized that it wasn't actually making a connection, and I had to change the number on the that the connection was using. So it's good to be able to try and relate to customers on their own level. Once you have an idea of what that level is. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have said that as my in my previous example, I wouldn't have said that to Carrie because I would have gotten quite a different symptom description of how them was. The one thing you don't want to do is interrupt the customer, even if you think you know what they're going to be saying, or even if the customer is old Grandpa Zippy and is talking very slowly and you're very sure you know what they're going to be saying 10 minutes before they've said it, you still don't want to interrupt them with the answer because it annoys them and feels condescending. Just isn't a very good way to keep up your rapport and makes them think that it makes them think that you believe you know more than they do.
Well, you do know more than they do. The most important thing, though, you can do is to act like you're not judgmental, and basically make them feel at ease with you. You don't want to overwhelm them.
You certainly don't pick the phone up and say, "Yes, good afternoon, stupid idiot. What's your problem now?" That's not likely to get the call off to a good start.
No.
No,
Your comment
I think
show, I can
think
see the
I'm.
IT crowd doing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I can see the
that.
help desk guy in the YouTube
Yeah.
video doing that. Maybe end up playing that for a lecture, or to illustrate what not to do in a call.
We could at least pass
I
that
don't
info
know
and
if.
discuss. I don't know if we want to play it, but I think we should at least put it on and as an example, or let people know it's
Yeah.
out there.
Yeah, it's a YouTube video, like the Clean the Laptop fan song. I'm not sure if it says here, but one thing you also don't do is tell the customer, or at least try to avoid it, that it was their fault, that something broke. You can tell them that, okay, that this setting was changed, must have been changed somehow, but you don't tell them that they forgot their password too many times, or they're an ignoramus, or anything like that.
You never say, "What did you do?" You never say a question. You not. What did you do?
You can
Even though that's
actually
what you want
say,
to.
"Do you believe there's anything you may have done?" That way, it's not,
Yeah, you
you're
could
not
do it that way.
accusing them. You can sort of say, "Look, is there anything you think that you might have changed that seem you might have caused this?" You don't say, "What did you do?" because you're accusing them of doing something, but you can ask them if they might have done something, and often you get some very good
Well,
responses to that.
what I'll do, I took a
or
little bit of a
something.
customer service. What has ch has anything changed? Has do you think this might have inadvertently happened? Try to keep you out of it as much as you can.
Yeah, but yeah, yes, exactly. Has anything changed since it's last working? In fact, that's one of the questions that, well, I think in here it says, "Have you installed any hardware or software?" But I mean, I would generalize that more and say, has anything at all on the computer changed since you last worked? So when the customer is finished, clarify what they said by paraphrasing. The text says a good way to do this. I would argue this is the only way to do this. In fact, when I worked for Microsoft, we were given points for actually paraphrasing what the customer said. That was one of the marks on the call. And if we did it well, then we got more points. And if Microsoft monitored our call and saw us not do it, and it was played in Redmond and to our quality coaches and everybody else, then we would be in quite a bit of trouble. Actually, my roommate had that happen. One of his calls was by Microsoft, and that was a very fishbowl experience for him. He was looked at by the bigwigs. So you'll say things like, "Let me see if I understand what you've told me," or I would say, "So as I understand it," and then launch into essentially what they said. So then you want to ask the customer any follow-up questions you might have. You want to make sure that you ask questions that are relevant to the problem, and you don't want to ask questions the customer have already answered when you're in the problem. If you have to fill something in, you might double check it. So by paraphrasing, or if there's an email address, you might say, from this email address you were able to, from this specific email address you were able to log in, from this specific one you weren't. And it paraphrases, and it also makes sure, clarifies in your mind that that's the email address. The two email addresses are different, as an example. You'll want to ask closed-ended follow-up questions now that you've actually guided the customer to talk about the problem. Now you want to ask more closed-ended questions that end in yes or no. Is this a desktop or laptop computer, for example, would be a closed-ended question, whereas what was what were you doing before you caused or sorry before the problem occurred would be an open-ended question. You never want to say before
not
you
before
caused
you caused the problem.
Yeah, what were you doing before you caused the problem? Yeah, Aiden's broken down. His next one will be, righto, stand still while I belt you with a stupid stick. Now, let's fix this.
Yeah, probably.
You'll be eligible for the ID10T tax. Thank you very much for playing. No.
I always chuckle. We had a very interesting experience when I took the class of someone during the role play who very much said, do you think you might have kicked the network cable?
That it was awesome. Quite... And this poor person. We completely laughed at him. We did, because...
We couldn't help it. It was unexpected.
We're like, you
just don't do that.
Do you think you might have kicked the cable or something? Really?
Yeah, he said
absolutely
something like that.
Incredibly accusatory tone in the role play. And if you do that, we will laugh at you. It has nothing. No offense. It's not a problem. It's nothing personal. But if you do it, yeah, we will laugh at you.
Sometimes people just break down at the same time. So sometimes people just break down and all the good customer service goes out the window and they start, like, you know, coming after the customer like sharks with a feeding frenzy, going, you think you broke it? Do you think you might have dropped it? You sure you didn't break it? And it's just like, no, you are not scolding your neighbor's kid here. You're trying to ascertain a tech problem. You know, I'm waiting for the person to sort of go, it obviously doesn't work. That's not good customer service.
So don't do that.
Yeah. No, yeah. Try to avoid that example that I just gave. There's some bad tech. Maybe I should get role-playing marks for that.
Nah, you'll be fine. What, you want another session with Daphne, do you?
No, actually, I didn't. I didn't have her last time. I
no,
got
you got the
session,
mafia.
Remember?
Yeah, you did. You got, no, like, the crazy
yeah,
poor
the
guy.
Russian mafia guy. Yeah, and I didn't group. Know if I could support him or not. Yes, I did very well. Now, it says here that it's important to behave professionally when dealing with customers. Always be prompt and respectful. Well, the prompt and respectful, of course, definitely. The professional part, though, I would actually argue that is to a point. If you get the most laid-back customer, I've found that sinking to their level, minus any swear words, of course, because your company's not going to like that, can help you actually build up a better rapport and help you couch things in a way that they'll actually understand, whether it be steps to do or or telling them things. I mean, if you have to tell them that they need to send the computer in for repairs, for example, they might understand it more in a little more laid back manner than a stiff professional one. So I would say be professionally adaptable.
Yeah, absolutely. Start with your level of professionalism. Start out as a professional tech support person. If you sense that this person does not want to speak to a professional tech support person, that you are too stiff for them, you can adapt. Now, maybe not swearing on the phone or anything, but you can adopt a more laid-back attitude, as he says.
But, of course, along with that, as it says many times in here, you don't want to start blaming other technicians or disparaging them. We had that incident at where I worked at NCO, where customers would call in with some problems, and they would say how, oh yeah, this tech would say this, and the the NCO customer service agent would say, "Ah, you got the guys from Sykes, didn't you? That other call center. Yeah, we've heard about them. You don't want to do that. It fosters negative feelings."
Never throw your coworkers under a bus. That's any job.
Yeah. Now, even if they do, although screw it up, can be, I mean, well, it can unless... be hard to do because. Well, I got a lady who said that she called a Microsoft tech, and he laughed. There was the computer wasn't working properly, and he checked her system, and then he laughed at her and called her stupid because her RAM wasn't set up right. I kind of couldn't help throwing him under a bus to a slight extent and saying, you know, you don't deserve to be treated that way, because she really didn't, and she was paying.
Well, that's sympathizing with the customer. That's different.
That's not throwing them under a bus.
You didn't deserve to be treated that way is different than those people are horrible.
Oh, and especially if you were sort of like, "Oh, you got Jack and he laughed at you. Yeah, he's a complete loser. You should see the sort of coffee he makes in the tea room, and he's got stinky armpits as well." That's putting him under a bus. You don't ever do that.
Saying, "I'm sorry, you shouldn't have, you shouldn't have been treated that way," is completely different.
Yeah, and that's what you should have
done. Yeah. Yeah, I was almost at the point of actually finding the notes and trying to take him to task for it, but I didn't know who it was, and she didn't have a name.
That's probably not your job either. That's a supervisor's job. I mean, it's up to her to lodge a complaint with the supervisor if she feels that's required, and then the supervisor will go through the notes. You can get some really nasty political situations if people start ganging and allying and chasing up vendettas, in my experience.
Well, and she hadn't actually given a name. I mean, it was probably, I'm assuming it wasn't from our call center, because I don't think anyone here would have been caught dead doing that. But, it was not a good way. So, for future reference, don't laugh at your customers while you're on the phone with them anyway. That's what the mute and hold buttons are for. of course, I'm only saying this because I'm quoting, but my roommate got a call from a customer whose computer was behaving rather sluggishly and who suddenly burst out, "Man, this is slower than Jesus' second coming!" Steve, of course, had to very quickly meet the customer. Yeah!
Oh,
he said he howled.
Okay, you've just given me an idea for a customer service person now. Thank you.
No.
That's, yeah. Well, Daphne can always have, get Daphne's other grandma on the phone.
No.
Well, she died. You can't do that.
She's dead. Well, all right, anyway.
That's why I said her other grandma. But yeah, no, of course, I was just paraphrasing. I was quoting the customer there. But yeah, Steve had to very quickly mute the call and howl his guts out for a while.
I wouldn't have been able to hit that button fast enough, which is why I don't do that job.
Fortunately, our boxes were right beside our keyboard, so it wasn't too hard.
That's good.
Speaking of that, of course, you want to make sure to know how to use the phone system. Know how to put customers on hold, resume calls, and transfer customers without disconnecting them. Your job on the call is to help the customer focus on the focus on and communicate the problem so that you can solve it. Typically, in a phone system scenario, transferring the customer involves pushing one button, typing in a number code, and then pushing another button. Or putting them on hold, calling the other desk, waiting until you actually get an agent, and then talking to them and hitting a button to transfer them. At least that's what it was in my system. And usually the transfers went just fine, except for the horrible times that I pushed the wrong series of codes. But typically you're only transferring them inside your organization, and then you would get on the line with the agent, explain to them what's going on, what you've done, and then transfer the customer to them. And usually that's done by actually bringing the customer on the line, talking with the agent, introducing the agent, respectfully butting out of the conversation. And so, yes, you have to be familiar with your phone system to do that and make sure that you don't hit the release button. In fact, I did that once. I was trying to put a customer on hold, and I bumped the hang-up button instead, and so I called my supervisor over. Do I call him back? No, continue on with your job. Okay. So I felt kind of bad, and I continued on with the next customer. but it does happen. So one thing you definitely want to do when you're transferring a customer is to give them the phone number of the place you're transferring them to. Just in case something blows up or a phone system dies or you can't get an agent for more than...
I've never actually had anyone do that to me. That's interesting.
Oh, I have.
Yeah, really
a lot of places
it's
policy. I don't know if I'm working because this 2G is flaky. But...
You're working our...
You're looking after Aiden, Sean. Have fun. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm helping with DNS and Grace is playing with navigational aids.
Okie dokie.
Not that you need looking after Aiden, but we're just saying who's supervising you. You're doing just fine.
No, I don't have the notes, but yeah, you seem to be doing okay.
Yep. Haven't experienced stage fright yet, but yeah, no, you really should be, if you can, you really should be giving them the number that you're of the department that you're transferring them to, because sometimes transfers do blow up, or, like I said, sometimes you can't get an agent, or you enter the wrong code, or various things might happen, and so, you know, if you accidentally meant to transfer, if you transfer them to billing, and you meant to transfer them to, a higher level of resolution specialist, which is what we, at least at Microsoft, call them. They're not level 2, they're resolution specialists, and we're support specialists. Then there's a bit of an oops there, and they need to know the right call to get the right department. So focus on what you can do rather than what you can't. Tell customers about alternative ways you can help them, such as email, fax, and remote access software. so, for example, a customer's not comfortable installing a service pack and wants a technician to come out and help them. Helping with updates of the service you provide, but a technician will not be available for another 2 weeks. You have remote access software, so, of course, you know, you can customer to... you can give the customer the option of using access software to install the service pack. Although in the case of a service pack, considering that the installation requires a reboot, it's probably better to have someone there anyway if you have any doubts at all that it'll work with the computer. On the phone, I was right there, but to my horror, I found my friend had one of those Dells that was affected badly by the SP2 upgrade. So we restarted and it pretty much blank screened. And we
Can
actually
anyone
had...
else doing a backup recording? This guy is going away.
He's not leaving. He's just...
Oh, I thought he was leaving. All right.
He's just talking with DNS stuff. Oh, I... I'm not recording. Are you, Sean?
I'm doing an Audio Hijack Pro really quickly. I just wondered... I don't know when I started it.
That never works.
Is that a little bit of something? We'll see.
Good luck.
We'll see.
Thanks for jinxing.
I'm on cellular, so I don't want to record because it's too
flaky.
Yeah,
you can't.
I'll start a recording in just a sec here. Yeah, it probably won't be a problem.
Yeah, I think he's still recording because he didn't accidentally.
Actually, I can't do a recording because I can't click the right mouse button. Oh well. I'm sure we'll be fine. So, remember that customers are people too. They can sense whether you're interested in helping them, just like you would be able to. So if you've ever called tech support and you get the board agent, well, of course, customers are just like you. And sometimes if they're maybe a police officer or something trained in that kind of thing, they're a bit better than you at reading people's voice. when putting a customer on hold, let them finish what they're saying, unless, of course, you're trying to choke back laughter. At that point, you just hit the mute button and then come right back. Tell the customer you need to put them on hold, then ask them for permission. Tell them how long you expect to be away, and doing during this time. And of course, when you do transfer to another agent, you'll want to give all the information, the customer's name, your name, the ticket number. You want to avoid using jargon and slang, so you don't want to tell the customer that the BSOD is caused by their CMOS, so they need to format the HD to resolve this symptom. You know, you want to tell them that computer's not booting properly because, say, a section called the CMOS is is damaged. Jargon is okay if you explain it in a good way. For example, using the CMUS, because it's mentioned here later, if you explain that a section of the computer called the CMOS isn't working properly, then that's better than just saying, yeah, your CMOS is hooped, we're going to have to... So you want to avoid a negative attitude or tone of voice. Apparently it helps to actually smile. It also helps in the case of a person I know at NCO. She kept getting the Customer Service of the Year award, and she was always perky with customers and always really chatty. Nobody knew why until they noticed she had this suspicious brown paper bag with a bottle in it next to her desk, and found out that vodka was her key to getting good customers' reports. Well, as she managed to balance it without actually making a problem, then I guess it worked for her. Of course, although if you were to think about embarking on this line of action, be very sure you know how to balance it and you're not drinking too much. But it obviously worked for her. Of course, you want to avoid culturally insensitive remarks. We had an agent just after this was, of course, I started working here there in 04, and so this was just, you know, close to 9/11, and we had an agent who was fired because most of our customers were Americans, and you know, this guy's Canadian, so, and this is just after the Iraq War, so an agent made the mistake of saying, well, at least we're not dropping bombs on people or something, when a customer made some. Now, they didn't last very long. You don't want to offend the customer in any way, shape, or form, no matter what they say. I've had some customers who are quite outspoken about their feelings about President Bush and his actions, and I had to bite my tongue a lot. Not that I would have said anything particularly cutting, but I just didn't want to take the chance that I see themselves as offended.
Wow.
In fact,
the
one
even...
time I... Well, hey, when a computer's restarting, you have to fill the silence.
Fair
somehow.
Enough.
Especially if you get one of those really slow ones. So, the one time I did speak relatively frankly to a customer, I said, well, you know, I'm hoping that debated with him, and he was okay with that. So, but yes, one thing, I'm not sure if it mentions here, but one thing that our company held as a policy is you do not want dead air, and that's probably a pretty good policy to live by. If the old Windows 98 clunker is slowly restarting and reading all of its floppy drives and zip drives and tape drives, you want to make sure that you say something either relevant or small talk related to the customer, because what you don't want to do is just sit there on the phone breathing into the mic.
Can
possibly
I say, you want to be careful how you do that, though, because I've had companies, not so much with computer stuff, I can't think of a specific example, but where you're waiting for maybe for a computer to restart or waiting for something to happen, and you get this sort of thing, and okay, so, you know, so, I don't know, like, they say something which, it just comes across as odd, like, for instance, I think one time I had, you know, so, I don't know, have you got any plans this weekend, or it was obviously just small talk, but I missed the signal as to why they were doing that, and I saw why, it was kind of a bit weird, like, I thought about it afterwards and worked it out and thought, oh, right, that's what they were trying to do, but there's perhaps ways and means of, yeah.
They had probably just been told by a quality coach, you've got to improve your air time, you've got to not have any dead air, so they were desperately trying in any way they could possibly think of to cut that down.
Okay, so I was having something done with my phone. I was having a feature added, more texting or whatever. And she had said, okay, well, we're just, you know, I'm just going to wait for this to come through. And it was like the day before New Year's Eve or something. And she was like, oh, do you have any plans? I'm like, no, not really. And she's like, oh, well, there's this thing where you can win a getaway to Las Vegas, and I'd love to go, but I don't think I'd be able to because my son's 13, and he might have a party at home while I'm not. I'm like, what is going on? Why is she doing this? And it's like, thank God it happened. Thank God it eventually finished what she was trying to do. But I'm just like, oh my God, get this woman off my phone. Like, just shut up and
I'm back.
Make it happen and go away.
I'd say it's an anti-dead air thing. You want the customer to talk about themselves rather than you talk about yourself. People generally like to talk about themselves, and so if you ask the right kind of question, then you can just they'll just fill the dead air for you.
The customer could be just as inappropriate as she was, though. I mean, it could go the other way.
Very, very definite. And when T-Mobile was our client, which we never worked for, fortunately, we had an agent fired for performing phone sex with a dealer. She kept having hour-long calls, and then they found out. Activations takes a while. Hey, the thing with the vodka is at least she did it right. I mean, no one noticed that she was drunk. I've had that go horribly wrong. My quality coach was telling me about somebody.
Oh my! Goodness. Somebody's.
Brian, I think, was that? But I've had something go. My quality coach was telling me about a time when that went horribly wrong, where the agent that he was monitoring had been a mortician, and the customer had been a volunteer firefighter. So they were talking about things, and unfortunately, the agent got into a bit too much detail about how they dealt with the bodies, and the coach was thinking that might be a bit inappropriate. Him and the customer. It also gives another meaning to the term dead air, but that's beside the point.
We weren't sure, of course, if you guys would be going offline, and we would have a backup recording. So,
oh no! Carrie's just across the room, and I went and took a stroll with the navigation aid that Ian brought.
Well, tell us about that after.
Will do. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Noting a little bit too long, but we'll see if we can get through this today. Hopefully, you of course want to avoid distractions or interruptions when talking with customers. We had a bad situation of this where a friend of my colleague, the scripting colleague who has a guide dog, sat beside me at NCO. The friend went and petted the dog, and of course Ives, the dog, got really excited and let out this gunshot-like bark. One of the people across the aisle was not amused at all. And then, what was worse though, is we had a supervisor, and he was one of your naturally loud people. So when he burst into gales of laughter, a lady four tables away, her customer went, "Oh, you're having a party there, are you?" And they could hear him all the way from four tables away. So unfortunately, you're typically going to be in a cubicle. I'm about 5'3", and when I was sitting down, the cubicle came close to my head. So it was just essentially a fabric-covered wall. So it is not easy to avoid things like this, especially when someone like the supervisor is a natural loudmouth. So you either have to play a lot with the mute button or just get on with it.
I've noticed that more and more as I call places. I've noticed more when I call places that the call centers are louder and you can hear more. You seem to be able to hear more people. And I guess it's just the nature of there's so many people that need to be served and we need to get so many people through. But it can be quite off-putting sometimes. Cell phone companies are where I see this.
And it's interesting because the call center, sometimes it'll be completely, you'll think the person's in a studio, so you know, it really depends. Maybe they have a different mic setup or something, but I've noticed that too. Sometimes if the agent does subscribe to the dead air philosophy, and it's interesting to hear some of the other people actually working with customers.
It is.
my quality coach had a situation where And of course, the next one here is avoid talking to co-workers about unrelated situations when talking with customers. My quality coach had an interesting situation where there was a person who was monitoring, and they were giving the customer a password, but then they were talking to their friend, I think they said, just a minute, I'll get the password, and then they tried to mute themselves, but it didn't work, so what the customer heard was, just a minute, I'll get the password, ha ha ha, yeah, that's right, and the quality coach had some words with her about that afterward.
Wow.
And I had a situation where I guess some people just out of high school thought that the floor of the call center was a running track where they could run across and yell at their friends. I was very tempted to stick my foot out and corner her and grab a supervisor. I was not happy at all.
Grace, you had a situation like that once, didn't you?
Grace, I had someone comment yesterday about my birds in my backyard because I'm a slacker.
What? About your birds in your backyard?
I think if he was on a call, maybe I heard them.
I work from home most of the time, and sometimes, you know, it's summer, so it's nice out. Sometimes I'll go sit in the backyard and hear the birds. I thought, oh, well, I guess I should fix that.
You seem like you have a lot of wind where you are right now.
Grace,
you may be in the very backyard now.
Grace was telling me once that she got forgotten about on a paratransit reservations call. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
How did that go again?
They were watching TV, and I don't know what.
Wow.
Well, you know, they're supposed to have TVs on so they can, quote, monitor any traffic accidents, end quote.
That's not what they were doing. I think it was some kind of soap opera.
One of our drivers said that's not what they do here either.
Wow. I would say turn, you know, later too. Have a radio with the traffic channel on, but that's just me. So you never want to transfer the customer without getting their consent, letting them know, you know, do you mind if I put you on a brief hold for 1 to 2 minutes? Was probably the most common phrase I used at while working at the call center. And of course, yeah, but it's what we were taught. I think eventually I shortened it to can I. But yes, you do want them to know that they're being transferred or put on hold. You don't want to just transfer them without them knowing. The worst thing would be the customer's still talking and they're waiting for another agent. And now it's important for you to keep control of the call and keep the customer focused. This will ensure that you don't waste your time with the customers.
I think I'll need to adjust your microphone again. It's cutting you off, at least it is here.
No.
Okay.
Not here.
Oh.
No?
Okay.
Maybe it's just
no. Think it is because it seems to be cutting off my I seem to hear that downward beep a lot, so that's why if I repeat myself.
Then
that's
you
why.
Might want to actually take it down about 2% more if it's doing that over.
Yeah, so take the sensitivity from whatever it is, take it down 2 more numbers.
Yeah, because you don't have a lot of background noise that would keep it keyed up. You would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's up, Brian?
Sean was saying it sounded like Aiden was cutting out, and I said, yeah, I'm getting it too.
Okay, I was
It's probably me. I'm now at 7, so we'll see what happens.
There you go.
I just want to make sure no one, you know, turns on a dishwasher or something and trying to make, stop that from bleeding through, but
you know
no
what?
One has yet,
it's
so it's okay.
It's a house. If it happens,
you're pretty
it happens.
Safe.
That's right. You're good.
Yeah, that's true. But you want to try to avoid taking it personally if the customer makes rude comments. I mean, back to the whole politics thing, we've had, of course, the Iraq was a bit of a sensitive issue because the Prime Minister decided not to go into it, and of course, sometimes we had customers that would disparage Canadians if they found out where we were from. So not just because of that, but because we're also not supposed to tell where we're from. When customers would ask, we'd usually say north of Seattle. And pretty much since there's only Blaine, Washington, north of Seattle for the most part, then they can kind of gather that we're from Canada. But yeah, some of the agents that heard some really rude rude things from customers, but you have to, as much as you can, try to, as long as they don't insult your technical abilities and call you an incompetent, well, refuse to take your advice, basically, there isn't very much you can do. Companies have different policies for that. In some cases, you can give the customers 3 warnings. I believe if they swear, in our company, it was, or did something that was offensive to you, you could give them 3 warnings and then hang up on them. So different companies might have policies regarding that.
At the customer service company I worked for, we always said that we were from somewhere in California, no matter where we were.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad tack.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't know. They don't have any idea.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, I mean, it's worked out good, because some customers even know you're from Canada. They can tell by the voice, and someone said, well, you're from Canada, right? And of course, I didn't want to exactly lie, so I said, yeah, and told them I was from the West Bit. So, you know, that's a pretty big area. We're not allowed to say Nanaimo or anything like that. But there have been some customers that say, oh, yeah, I've been logging up near Victoria, so that could help build a bit of rapport. So, of course, it's not an absolute rule of thumb, but it's good to try to live by it.
Interestingly, and I'm not representative, but I our culture diversity teacher when I was in college told us that he went for a job somewhere, and basically a ton of people from Columbus, Ohio got hired because apparently we have... I'm not a good example because I listen to too many people with accents, but people who are from here that don't have no discernible accent that people on the phone can pick out where you're from. I'm not really good at that, but some of the people I talk to I can totally see that live around here, I can totally see why they would get picked on voice quality and stuff.
Yeah, oh wow, that's interesting. I guess they would, well, some people like different accents. In my media studies class, it was found, they were saying that in England, that Scottish people would on average get hired more in call centers because the Brits like the Scottish accents. Usually if I ask a customer, if it's the other shoe and I'm asking the agent, oh, where are you from, I might say, oh, are you in Ontario, or purposely leave it vague so it's not like I'm trying to stalk them, but, you know, yeah, giving them an out so they don't have to say, yeah, I'm, you know, in Toronto near Pearson. So, so try to identify problem customers and how to deal with them. There are some of these things aren't huge problems, but there are some that you really want to look at. One thing that I'll add is the customer with I'll call it an interesting headspace. One of my roommates got when we were at NCO got a customer that would that insisted that companies were watching her dress over the computer. And, of course, failing to realize that this is a dial-up internet connection. Yeah, even if it did have enough bandwidth to run a webcam, it was only on at her request. So, it's, I would say a customer with interesting headspace. Once I actually got a customer that was paranoid about conspiracy problems, and after all the things she told me, I could understand why phone services would just be randomly canceled on her, and no one would have any explanation, and her accounts would just randomly disappear. And so she eventually called me and was like, "Do I need to go away?" And I looked at her account and didn't find any notes on the account. So I tried to reassure her, but so different customers can, because of the their lives, can have different different reactions to things. So you've got the talkative customers, the chatty Cathys that talk about everything except the problem. Like me when I accidentally asked the man with the email address johnbookseller@msn.com what kind of books he sold. I got a 15-minute dialogue. Fortunately, we didn't have any calls in queue at the time. Can be difficult to get a talkative customer to focus on the problem. So try to allow the customer to talk for a minute, gather as much information about the problem as possible, and then he might, you know, try and and politely step in to refocus the customer. So you might just ask a few questions, like, you know, if they're talking about their favorite game, you might say, "Ah, have you been able to play it recently? Is that your, you know, is that what what's not working on your computer. So you might want to try to lead them back. Try to get them to talk endlessly about the computer problem, because eventually, the one good thing about a talkative customer is if you can do it right, you can have them tell you everything you want to know without having to ask a whole bunch of questions. You just have to listen for a long time. If you're one of those people that can stand the talkative, as it's been called, the verbal diarrhea, some can and some can't. So, but then of course, once you've figured out what the problem might be, ask as many closed-ended questions.
And a lot of companies have policies on that too.
What, on keeping customers focused or closed-ended questions, or
no on talkative customers and that? Often, from what I've heard anyway, a lot of companies will say, you know, like if you've got a certain volume of calls that you need to get through, or a certain average length of call, or, you know, often there's policies surrounding how long to let them talk for, or when, or if you can interrupt, or whatever.
That's a big one, actually. We know somebody, Rhonda, who works for Verizon, and call volume and call quality are critical. And if she's on a call for too long and the boss gets annoyed, he's like, "Yeah, what about your call volume? Why aren't you handling this many calls? Rah, rah, rah." And it's really a toss-up between the customer service and the call volume.
Yeah, well, I keep pushing control. Yeah, well, exactly, because, I mean, Don was told by a supervisor to create a sense of urgency on the phone with the customer to try to fix the problem. But it's, I mean, that's not always the case. If you've got a slower customer, a new customer who's frightened, the last thing you want to do is show them that, you know, your call is not important to us. Let's get you off as soon as possible. but of course, the supervisors are looking at the numbers, and it's rather difficult.
That reminds me, there's a book called "Your Call Is Not That Important to Us," that is a investigative journalist's reflection on the customer service industry in various forms. That might be, I found it quite interesting.
Yeah, I always hate the agents with perfect call times, because they probably sacrificed a bunch in customer service somewhere. I mean, I've learned some interesting things with chatting with customers. Like I said, you know, with those Windows 98 computer restarts take a long time, and you can learn some interesting things if you're careful and not too impertinent. But I mean, of course, definitely with a talkative customer, you don't want to encourage non problem related questions, such as asking "How are you today?"
The other problem is the other problem with talkative customers is if they get off onto a tangent, you'll suddenly find about their best recipe for quiche, how best to cook shrimps on the barbie, what their children are up to, which unfortunately really doesn't have anything to do with their inability for their modem to connect. And that's when you get into trouble for having exceedingly long call times. Has anybody seen Jumping Jack Flash? The movie with Whoopi Goldberg in it? She was getting into trouble for putting personal messages into her correspondence when she was working for the bank, if my memory serves.
No, I haven't. That's interesting.
So then you got the rude customer.
Yeah, sometimes I get them, and they're very emotionally upset about things. And no, go ahead. This is being dumb. So go ahead.
No, go ahead. It's your turn. Go first. I was just going to make a point, but you go ahead, because you probably have a good point as well.
I try and sort of keep people focused, but occasionally I've gotten people that were, you know, very emotionally upset about, like, I had a girl a couple weeks ago who, sorry about the traffic noise, I'm not at home, who got, you know, our computer wasn't working, and she was crying, like, sobbing in tears, and what are you going to say? Okay, stop that now, we got to get this done here. So you have to sort of balance it a bit. I mean, it was a bit weird, right? It's not that big a deal to me, but I don't know. Like, you try and sometimes balance it out a bit. I mean, I'm fortunate that I don't have somebody breathing down my neck with call handling times, but you do have to, some people, like, will go on and on and on forever, and you have to focus them back gently on the issue that they called about.
It's really a fine line, actually, because on the one hand, you've got to make sure you keep the call on track, but on the other hand, it's a very fine line between somebody who's sort of started sobbing. If you treat them the wrong way, they're just going to go completely to pieces, and you won't end up being able to solve their problem.
This conspiracy theorist that I got. I mean, she was genuinely upset that, I mean, I'm not talking about the what I call the crazy one that had them watching the dressing. I'm talking about the one where things really had gone down the tubes for her in a lot of surprising areas, and she kept having to switch cell phone services and kept getting flack. And I did my best to reassure her, of course, and that I didn't see any warning signs or any problems or anything, but it's hard, you know, when the customer genuinely has some issues. Once when I was at T-Mobile, I never actually worked for them, but the call center was, and pretty much everybody except for us, the three blind mice, worked for T-Mobile. And so then once I heard an agent turn and go, "How in the heck am I supposed to call this or code this?" Essentially, a husband and wife, he was on the phone with, about the cell phone, have been fighting. The husband, I guess, had walked out of the room and left the wife to talk to him. And in the middle of the call, she went, "I need to go. My husband's just had a heart attack." And so, essentially, we were thinking, well, joking about call drop due to death, but it was, I mean, to have something like that happen when you're on the phone with someone can be quite upsetting.
Actually, sorry, you had a point to make, Grace. Did you still remember what it was? Or
My point is, if you get a talkative customer, once you take back control of the call, try and ask as many closed-ended questions as you can.
Yeah, that's what I had said. Yes.
Okay. Cool. I'm sorry.
Ask closed-ended things.
The other thing you've got to keep in mind is that some people, and this is certainly something I've noticed more and more. People want somebody or something to take their anger out on, and the call center person is absolutely excellent because there's nothing the call center person can do to them, really, without a lot of messing around and legal messed up stuff. So they will get angry when you put them on hold, and then when you start talking to them, they'll get angrier and angrier because you are the culmination of their bad day. So you got to watch out for that and try and disarm that as much as possible, because obviously, you know, it as the person who's trying to help them with their problem, it is obviously all your fault in the first place, Grin. And I say that with maximum sarcasm.
Well,
because they're a visible target, I guess. I mean, it's not fair, but it's a case of, this isn't working, this is broken, I don't know what to do about it, therefore I'm not necessarily yelling at you, but because I'm going to yell, you're going to take it as being at you, because, yeah,
well,
whether that's sort of fair or not.
Don't forget, for customers, when they say you, they mean your company. So, you know, when they say, "Oh, you know, you messed up my system," they mean Microsoft messed up their system, which, in the case of Windows, I found is sometimes true, with different settings that they put on. And one thing I try to do, of course, you have to be very careful about this, and you don't try this right off the bat, is if you've got an angry customer or a rude customer, try to make them laugh. Because if you can make them laugh, you know, that breaks some of the tension. So if you do happen to, you know, notice that they're a Jets fan or something, you know, try to say something that might make them laugh, and if you can, that makes them see you as well. It makes them see you as a person and not this faceless Microsoft employee that's just sitting there and wants to get him off the phone and is a typical bureaucrat and can't do anything to help them. We'll talk a little bit about support boundaries later on, and I've had a time where a customer had some modem driver issues, and I said, "Well, look, I knew that tier 2 was backed up for a long time," and I said, "Well, look, you know, I can do one of two things. I can transfer you there, and we can wait. You can wait and go for that, or I can actually try to help you reinstall your modem drivers, but keep in mind that this is not a standard Microsoft operating procedure. And of course, if you ever go outside your support boundaries because you feel your ethics demand it, you make sure to tell them at least 5 times that this is not standard service. This is not something they can get when they call." And it's It's very difficult, and most times people just don't bother. But sometimes, if you, I felt genuinely sorry for customers, and it can be a simple fix, but it's not something that's done usually. So I would, but I would make sure to let them know that you're stepping outside the line for them, and again, that makes them feel more grateful towards you, and can help bleed off a lot of anger very quickly if you show that you're actually willing to go an extra mile to help them. Of course, sometimes rude customers are abusive and uncooperative and get aggravated. So one thing you want to do is listen very carefully, and you don't want them to have to repeat anything. Try to contact a favor technician if they have someone they would rather talk to. And of course, follow a step-by-step approach, and without being condescending as well to any rude customers. And give them the option if you can talk to, you know, if they want to talk to Don, and you know Don's going to be available for 2 hours, give them the option to say, look, you know, I'll do what I can, or I can you can wait for 2 hours. I had a customer who immediately called and said, I want to speak to a level 2. And I said, well, okay, but to avoid getting hung up on, I need to know what the problem is, because some of them don't take calls without knowing information. And eventually I was able to help him solve it. Steve did see a ticket where that happened, a few tickets, because at Microsoft you have level 1 to level 3. And the level 1 and level 2s are usually in the same building, and level 3s are more often in Redmond. So the customer would call in, and of course this is one of the, I call them the Anglophobes, where they only want someone who speaks good English. So the notes went, customer wanted to speak to someone who spoke English, transferred to supervisor, wanted someone who could speak English, transferred to level 3, call dropped. And this went on for about 2 or 3 times. And finally, when they called in and got Steve, he was thanking his deity that Steve could actually speak English and, you know, didn't have an accent. So sometimes the higher level, as we call them, resolution specialists, can be quite snotty and drop calls for no good reason. I mean, if a customer wants someone who can speak without a thick accent that bad, maybe the level 3 technician could just take the call, but instead they...
But on the other hand, they have had no information from either of the lower levels as to what's going on. The job of the people in level 1 and level 2 is to sort of try and deal with the stuff before it gets to that point. So I can see where that technician might say, you know what? No, I don't have any information about this person, what their problem is, and I should have had that before. So I can sort of see where they're coming from.
I can see where their point. It was just too bad.
Yeah,
that
it's still
three
kinda,
level
it's
three technicians agreed on that.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, especially
still not
if,
cool,
if English was that important. Yeah. So yeah, if the customer wants to wait for their technician, then they can record it in their ticket. Actually, we had a case where we got put onto another call. Fortunately, we were waiting, but there was somebody who wanted help with JAWS, and I believe Steve was the free one that was taken, which is too bad because he was visually impaired. It would have been better to have Don, because Don was the guy in my case that actually did scripting, and so it would have been better to have him deal with the JAWS problem. But there's it's nice if you can get someone the customer can relate better to. So apologize for the wait time and inconvenience, even if there's no wait time, because there will be, because they have to wait for the technician. And reiterate that you want to solve their problem as quickly as possible. So always let them know that, you know, you're happy to help, and you know it would be better to go through you, as in my previous example. Don't ask the customer to do obvious steps if you can determine the problem without them, possibly. Don't be rude to the customer, even if they're rude to you. And then there's the angry customer, and I mean, this is the one that's just fed up, because, and probably rightly so, because they've either been through, like that lady, been laughed at by the other agents, which fortunately she understood that I was not Mr. uncouth, and she was able to work with me. so the angry customers talks loudly during the call, and often tries to speak when the technician is talking. So then, of course, they're usually frustrated they have a problem. So let the customer speak their problem without interrupting. This allows them to vent properly, and so give them a bit of extra time for that. Sympathize with the customer's problem, of course, but not sickly sweet sympathy either, because that would just make them feel worse. Apologize for any inconvenience, except that in our company we weren't actually allowed to say I'm sorry for this. We had to say I'm sorry for the inconvenience caused to you or something, but we couldn't in any way blame the company for any wrongdoing, which I suppose makes sense, but it made trying to sympathize with customers a little bit difficult. And try not to put the customer on hold if you can possibly avoid it, because, well, they've already been waiting on hold probably long enough, and they're sick and tired. try not to spend call time about what caused the problem. Rather redirect it to solving the problem. Anything that might possibly make the customer happy. Like I said, this would be the kind of customer, if you can try to make them laugh, and obviously not right off the bat, so they don't get a bad impression of you and think that you're just on there to make jokes, but if during the call you find a way that you might be able to make them laugh, and sometimes that relieves tension. Then there's a knowledgeable customer, and interestingly, I've been on the other side of this one. The knowledgeable customer wants to speak with a technician that's equally experienced in computers. This type of customer usually tries to control the call and does not want to speak with a level one technician. But interestingly enough, my friend was fixing my router, and he needed the IP address for TELUS's, that's our ISP's, online customer care access system. So he called up TELUS, and he's used to dealing with their business department, but he had forgotten the number at home, so he had to go through the regular channels. And I could sense that he didn't want to speak to a common L1 agent. And the question he asked was pretty advanced for them. They didn't know the IP address, so eventually, when they were trying to figure out the problem, eventually he just asked for a supervisor and told them that he couldn't connect properly using the web address. But I thought it was interesting just to see the knowledgeable customer from the other side of the coin. I mean, I would consider myself relatively knowledgeable, but I always give every agent that I can, every step that I've tried and things that I think to solve the problem, but I don't try to control the call or anything. And then if it seems to overwhelm the level one agent and they want to transfer me to a level two, well, so much the better. Then obviously they can't help. So, but that's better than actually controlling the call and being arrogant about it. So if you're a level one technician, try to set up a conference call with a level two technician. Give the customer the overall approach to what you're trying to verify. So, you know, if the modem's giving an error 666, you might say, well, check device manager. You don't need to say, okay, I need you to pick up that big thing with a cord on it. That thing's called a mouse, and I need you to move it to what's called the start button. It's on the bottom left-hand corner of your screen. No, you just ask him if the modem's been turned on in device manager. And usually the call goes a lot faster that way, and the customer's more happy with you. So you, of course, don't want to check the obvious, such as the power cord, but you just want to ask the customer. A good way I found of checking the power settings is say, what is on the screen right now? And that way, that tells you that the computer is on, the computer is where you want it to be, and that nothing has interfered with it, so you know you can avoid the
and
easy
if you've
plugged
got a blind
in question
customer,
pretty
you'll
easily.
Know it right away.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course there's another way of building rapport, so that's where the insert T comes in. So, and then you get the inexperienced customer, like the nice old lady I talked about earlier, where I had to listen to her make dial-up sounds to try to understand the problem. these customers are not usually able to follow directions correctly and not able to communicate the errors they encounter. And this is particularly difficult for me because these are the only group where pictures really come in handy in telling them where the error number is located. I'm not sure if this is brought up in here, but another thing you don't want to do is talk to the customer about your weakness. Don, bless him for all his good points, his genius knowledge of scripting, was not able, was not very confident with himself at all. So often if the call was taking too long, he'd even tell the customers that he was blind and ask them if they wanted a supervisor because that might get their problem solved faster, and I wanted to hit him. But usually they would say, no, it's all right, and he would continue. But I couldn't believe that when I actually heard that come out of his mouth. And that's,
wow.
That's something you don't really want to do as an agent. Yeah, he's got some issues.
Don't ever do that, you guys. Really.
I've heard stories about him from another person who knows.
Really? You know someone else? Oh, okay.
Yeah, you do too.
Okay. You want to be careful about that. Don't, as another thing that's with him, is don't be too hard on yourself as an agent. Everybody messes up. Everybody is, you're going to, there's like in a hospital, you're going to lose patients, you're going to lose customers, you're going to get off the call and think that, you know, realize that a customer is mad at you, but as it says, keep as the notes say, keep your, remember that each new call is a new start, and try not to let it get to you, because I mean there are so many other factors that you aren't aware of in customers' lives. So don't ever be too hard on yourself as an agent, because so many things can happen and you will eventually get there if you let yourself get there. But if you don't and you have an amazing lack of self-confidence, such as my very smart scripting friend, who did manage to keep me my job for about 4 years, so he had some good points coming from him, then you're just going to create a bad vibe with you and the customer, and then you're just going to be more stressed and less able to deal with customers that you can actually help. So try to avoid that. I would say if it's as bad as him, seek counseling, but it's just my opinion. So when you're dealing with inexperienced customers, use a simplified process of instructions. You want to take baby steps with them. That's when you would take, say, you know, pick up that thing with the ball on the bottom that's beside your computer and move it until the little pointer gets to that start button there and click that.
Well, maybe not quite that basic, but yeah, I see where you're going.
Yeah, not quite, man. Exaggerating for effect.
No, sometimes you will get people like that. You will get absolute noobs that do not know what a mouse is. Very occasionally, but it will happen.
My jaw dropped open when I told someone to select all the items in the objects list in Internet Explorer, and they said, "How do you select?" Well, I had to put them on hold and ask, because I don't know. And I
Control
don't know
I.
how to... Well, yeah, but I didn't know how to determine where the focus was with the mouse. Like, I didn't... I know screen readers are in different places, so I didn't know.
Well, what you
how
actually do is
sure
you click
list.
On one object with the mouse, and then you press Control I, and that selects all of them, just for your future reference.
Yeah, good to know.
Another thing
but
you can
yeah,
do is
you,
if
you
they need if they need to
questions.
Select multiple things, they you'll click they'll you know like Kira said click one and then hold down Control and then click the other ones that they want, similar to doing Control and the arrow keys and then the space bar to select the one you've landed on. The mouse does that too.
Okay, good to
this
know.
This is where yeah, this is where having tactile diagrams could be helpful for people.
Yeah, and that is another thing that Don waxed on about, is he wanted pictures of everything. Yeah, that that would be very convenient, and that definitely would have helped us 4 years ago.
Well, these are Windows 7, but still, yeah.
Oh, heck, I had 95. But yeah, of course, you don't want to use Ministry Dargon to inexperienced customers or be condescending to them. You want to try to guide them through what they need to do without without belittling them. So now that we're finished the call center bits, I think this would be a good time to wrap up. And since we're over our 2-hour limit.